You're raised as an athlete to fight back. So why all of a sudden, when you retire, do you stop the good fight?
This is Finding Center with Nick Hardwick.
You only need one stimulus. Bone density is the same thing. You only need one of the appropriate level of loading.
Gotcha.
So, you know, it can be sunny on Christmas Day and we can go outside and we're not getting, you know, a tan from that. No one is. Because the light's just not intense, which is why, you know, when you pick up the 10-pound dumbbell and you're doing curls with it, like, I don't care who you are, you're doing nothing.
Yes.
Right. So, like,
you have to do that for half the day to get what you need out of it. Well, hello, guys. Hope everyone's having a great day. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Hardwick.life, foundational elements for a fulfilled life. Got a super exciting array of new performance products that are out now to complement our other pharmaceutical grade supplement line that includes Brain Life, Gut Life, Joint Life, and Foundation Life. The products include Build Life. It's an incredibly pure New Zealand grass-fed whey protein. Fuel Life, which I'm drinking right now with a little matcha tea in it. Small meal replacement. It includes New Zealand grass-fed whey again. And Pump Life, a pre-workout, pre-combat sport energy formula designed with cognition and neuroprotection in mind. It's got theanine, caffeine, creatine, and glutathione in a convenient packet. And I highly, highly recommend them. Follow my stories at Nick Hardwick. We're at Hardwick Life on Instagram to find out more about them. And I hope you haven't missed our newest team member to Hardwick Life. It's Casey Thomas. He's a registered dietitian. He's the performance nutritionist for UCLA basketball. He writes a weekly column for us, answering your questions and even taking one-on-one clients. If you're interested in that, please hit us up at hardwick.life. Again, he's got great advice. And also on Hardwick Life, Jamie Hardwick has some tremendous, easy-to-make, affordable recipes that come out every single Wednesday. And we're also brought to you by Bubs Naturals, collagen protein, and MCT oil powder. We've been with our friends at Bubs since they opened in 2017, and we've been with them because they're a tremendous company and they have great products. We love how easily they mix into our coffee, green teas, hot chocolates for added creaminess and another hit of protein. And did you know this? If you take collagen protein 45 minutes to 1 hour before a workout, along with vitamin C, which we also have in our Pump Life, you're going to increase your collagen protein synthesis by up to 4 times. Pretty awesome for your cartilage and your joints, your hair, skin, nails, all the good stuff. Check them out at bubsnaturals.com. All right, guys, you know this. I hope as we get older, we all get a little wiser. It's kind of the goal, right? For me, that means we can work a little smarter, not harder. We can have the same positive effect we are looking for initially. But it takes a long time, lots of experience and failures to get to the point where we can eliminate all of those wasted efforts and really pare ourselves down to just the essentials for the maximum results with minimal effort, freeing our time up to do more of what we love. What if I told you that it doesn't take that much effort to attain the physique you want? What if you were actually working too hard in the gym for your best body? And what if all that weightlifting that may feel good now in the long run was destroying your body and joints? Our guest today, John Jakisch, PhD, is the best-selling author of the book titled Weightlifting is a Waste of Time and So is Cardio. By the way, it's available now, special new release for $1. It's a super easy read. It's $1. I highly recommend it. Some great information in there, all science-backed, all research-backed. Really well done. The book will certainly have you reconsidering your fitness regimen. Some have described John as the Tony Stark of the fitness industry. Pretty cool. Dr. Jakisch will tell us how 10 minutes a day is not only all it takes to attain the body you're looking for, but will argue that time is actually optimal. He has partnered with Tony Robbins to bring multiple revolutionary products to the marketplace. His first is a suite of equipment developed with his mother in mind who had osteoporosis called OsteoStrong. It's the most effective bone density building medical technology available. The facilities located all across the country are designed to build bone density in under 10 minutes per week. That sounds pretty awesome. And I think a lot about it, especially for my own parents, our aging generation, find out what is required to trigger bone growth, and then what led Dr. Jakish to develop the X3 system. It's a variable resistance system. So in the first place, what's variable resistance? Why is it better than traditional weight training? And what is this business about cardio being a waste of time? I got to learn more about that. Really, I mean, come on. Who likes cardio? Just kidding. I know some of you do. Check out the OsteoStrong website at osteostrong.me and look into the X3 products at drj.com. That's drj.com. Also follow him on Instagram at Dr. Jakish, drjaquish. Come on and learn with me. Here's Dr. John Jakish. Doc, welcome on. How are you?
Hey, I'm super. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's quite the pleasure. I look forward to talking about the book, the products, the business, OsteoStrong, X3, all of that. I mean, I think it's you're really on the forefront of where we should be looking from a fitness standpoint and a health standpoint. So,
I mean, you know, I was confused. I thought fitness was about results. There's some argue with me that it's not. It's about bench pressing so you can talk about it on Facebook.
Is that what you're getting out of a lot of people? Like you put out a new product and
10% of people are like, yeah, it's like, you know, you want to talk about results and it's like, well, but you're not lifting iron. It's like, was that the point? Though the point was results.
Right. Yeah. So give me in your mind, what should we be shooting for from a health and a fitness standpoint? What are we, I should put the caveat, like 99% of the world, other than like the elite competitors who are making money trading in really the future health of their body, like I once did, and damaging for the high performance in the short term. But in a long-term standpoint, it's, you know, there are trade-offs for performing at a really high level and banging heavy weights and running into gigantic men and deadlifting 1,000 pounds. There are huge trade-offs for that. So yeah. In your head, give me health and fitness.
Well, two things. I'll start with the pro athletes and then I'll go into the rest of us. A lot has changed in the training of professional athletes. Yes, they're at risk when they're on the field, but the idea now is that they're at close to zero risk as possible when they're off the field. And you're like, if you're in the NFL and you do a one rep maximum, you're in trouble.
That's true.
Strength coach, like you're a, can he's profanity on the show?
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay. You're a fucking idiot if you do it. End your career by doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and it happens in a second. And then, oh, well, you know, career's over. I guess I'll just, you know, go sell pencils at the fucking dock. You know, like.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And you know, there's a big myth that sort of the sideways hat, you know, quote, power lifters, which are really just obese people who call themselves power lifters.
Right.
99.9% of people who call themselves power lifters are just fat guys who lift.
Which when you take the overall health of that individual, it's catastrophic. Oh, yeah. I bet if you looked at their blood panels, it's a nightmare for a doctor.
Yeah, right. You know, like I'm carb loading, you know, like really every day for like 3,000 days. Okay. like this idea that these guys are throwing around heavy weight is just false. Like that is not what they're doing. They're already strong when they get in the league, and I'm speaking, but yes. I do most of my one-on-one. I only do one-on-one work with professional athletes. So like I'm it's about 25 guys outside of the Miami Heat and then the Miami Heat.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so, and they even endorsed my book and they let me use their name, which is kind of a big
deal. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
It says a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it says it right on the back of the book.
It's a great book, by the way. It's a great book. It's an easy read.
Yeah, you know, there's like some guy the other day that's like, I'm so sick of reading about the studies in your book. And I'm like, I distill down the studies so that you can understand them. And that was a pain in the ass. Because the book is supposed to be written at a third grade. Well, first they told us to write at a third grade level, you know, like the USA Today rule.
Okay.
The article is supposed to be written at a third grade level. And then they changed it to high school because okay. There's no way we can get this level of science and this level of reading. Like,
they don't match up.
Yeah. So that we had to bump up. But yeah. So, it, it's not the most simple read. Like, you got to be smart and you got to care.
Yes.
But, you know, it's still high school reading level. So,
right. Yeah,
most of our customers would get to that because we don't target bodybuilders. We target busy professionals.
Right. Yeah. People who are looking for efficiency.
Right. Yeah. Spending all day in the gym is not something that is enticing to them.
Right. Like if you want to spend time at the gym, I like hanging out in gyms. I like listening to music. I like just being in the environment, but most people don't. Like, they just want to go get the work in and get out and get the results.
Yeah. Especially if you like have something going on in life, like, you know, or a child or like a job.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Hang out in gyms all day long. They don't have those things.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, Doc, if you don't mind, I want to go back a little bit. Will you give me a bit of a bio on you? How'd you become, and I read this, and this is kind of cool that people are calling you the Tony Stark of the fitness industry. How did you get to this point? I don't know if you've heard that, but that's quite the compliment.
Yeah, it was in a Chicago Tribune article, and it sucks. They deleted the whole section of the paper that I was in. It was called, I used to live in Chicago, so it was called like, you know, community something, and they got rid of it. And I was like, damn it. That's like the coolest thing that's ever been said about me. But I think it was also said in the Boston Sun. I'm definitely a disruptor, not intentionally. I just look to solve problems, and frequently the problems I look to solve are different than, you know, what's out there, like than the standard of care. So, you know, sort of like, you want to get stronger, lift weights. My answer is no, that's a very inefficient way to get stronger. So, I came from the medical device industry. So a lot of people are like, this jerk came out of nowhere. You know, they're all mad. I told you, I get death threats.
What are people so mad at?
Well, they think I came out of nowhere. And the truth is, I've been for 13 years in the medical device industry, and I developed a bone density treatment device, really to treat my mother's osteoporosis. That was the inspiration. And I fixed her osteoporosis and reversed it for a few hundred thousand other people.
So this is really cool. Don't skip over this, because I think this is super cool. I looked into this. It's OsteoStrong, and people can find it at osteostrong.me. Tell people, give me a little bit on this first, because I think this is super rad. I got a 75-year-old mom, most likely osteoporosis. She weighs like 85 pounds. I'm assuming she's heading down that path, as most people kind of in the back end of
yes
like most people in the back end of their life, right? It's huge concern. So tell me about it. Like, how'd you and the machines look? I mean, I've gone through the videos and everything, and they're quite impressive.
There's you see him actually working with a robotic arm?
Yes.
Yeah. There's nothing like it.
Yeah. They're dialed into the computer, and they're measuring all, and it's like 10 minutes a week.
Well, you gotta like primary mineralization of a bone after an osteogenic loading moment is 5 to 10 days. So that's why I tell people to do it one time per week. Like, you don't want to, it's sort of like you wouldn't do a bicep workout every 2 hours.
Right.
Got to let the muscle recover. You got to let it build again. So, you know, that's why it's just the metabolic rate of bone is slower than the metabolic rate of muscle tissue. But then look at the metabolic rate of cardiac tissue. Your heart starts to heal itself if it's damaged in moments.
Really?
Yeah, because it can't. You can't just have a, yeah.
It needs to.
Yeah, you could die. Cardiac metabolism is just the metabolism of the cells is very fast. So every type of tissue has a different metabolic rate. Tendons and ligaments have a very slow metabolic rate. Brain tissue has a very high metabolic rate. So what I did was, my mother was diagnosed with osteoporosis, and I said, and she looked at the medications and was like, I'm not doing this. These are terrible. And a lot of side effects. And so I said, all right, well, let me see what I can figure out for you. And so I looked for a group of people who are what would be called super responders, like, or they have, you know, they have in some way got their bone to just be more powerful than everybody else's. Not, we're not looking to get back to normal. We're looking at like superhuman level bone density. And I found this population. They're very easy to find through literature searches. It was gymnasts, because they absorb sometimes 10 times their body weight when they hit the ground.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. Just you nobody watch it. When I watch it, I'm like, oh my goodness, how do their legs not snap?
They hit the ground because they condition for it.
Yeah.
And condition for it, it's you're building bone density. That's it. And so what the conclusion I came to was, I'm going to build a series of medical devices that emulates impact. So it gives you the benefit of impact without the risks of the actual impact. Because, you know, impact, there's a reason gymnasts also retire at 19 years of age.
Yes. Because
you beat up. Yeah. So, and I mean, beat up to the point where, you know, they have trouble walking. Like if you can see some.
Oh, yeah.
Really crushed people that,
yeah,
and you know, they're like 40 years old and they have trouble getting out of a chair, and they're like, yeah, I was a gymnast when I was 15. And you're like, fuck, you know, you've been miserable for 15. That's a terrible life. So I identified this population. I prototyped a series of devices, put my mother through it. Within 18 months, she had the bones of a 30-year-old.
No kidding.
And, yeah. And she was in her 70s.
Wow. So yeah. Even that late, it's fairly easy to reverse with the crook.
Have an adaptive response. And which gets into muscle a little bit. That was my first like moment of clarity when it came to training. It's like, huh. Generally people over like 35 or 40 have a much more difficult time putting on muscle mass. You know, nobody puts on, you know, like me, I put on 60 pounds of mass, having my body fat go down at the same time after turning 40 years old.
Goodness gracious.
Right.
60 pounds. How quickly? How long did that take?
43.
Wow.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and that's, and you've probably been training for a long time too. So when people talk about,
training for years, and it just didn't really do much for me. And every time I like thought I was getting bigger, I was really just getting fatter. And then I'd diet down, and then
you'd lose muscle.
Yeah, and then you know I'd get a little bit leaner, and then I'm like, oh, like I really thought I was more muscular than this, and then I just felt like skinny.
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's kind of what I go through is like, hey, I'm bulking up, and then there's this spillover effect, and I start getting. Putting it on, and the first place it comes on always is my love handles and my thighs, and then I get skinny, and then my shoulders shrink down and my arms shrink down and my chest goes away, and it's like, oh man, it's like I can't have both at the same time. Like that's a problem.
Right. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then OsteoStrong flourished from there. I filed for patents and I licensed the intellectual property to Sorry, that was bugging me.
That's all right.
It's like, what is that thing in frame?
Yeah, that's a chair.
Yeah. Well, in case I need to talk to somebody, like I can have another person sitting right here.
Exactly right. You filed the patents.
Filed the patents and then licensed the IP, and that thing was off and running. And now there's 140 clinics.
Wow.
Clinics in 8 different countries. It's
great, still growing.
Oh yeah.
And what's the population that's coming in? Male, female, age? What are we looking at?
About 65% female, and almost everybody 40 and up.
Okay. What do I'm sure you know the numbers on osteoporosis. Is it more of a female issue or male issue? What are we looking at from a population standpoint there?
3 in 5 females and 1 in 5 males.
Gotcha. That's a lot.
Oh yeah. It actually ends as many lives as breast cancer.
Does it really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not as scary. For some reason, something growing inside your body and killing you is like a lot worse than breaking a hip and not being able to recover it and dying of pneumonia in the hospital.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's the stats. I pulled the stats up this morning on it. It's 1 in 3 adults over 50 dies within a year of suffering a hip fracture. And then older adults have a 5 to 8 times higher risk of dying within the first 3 months of a hip fracture compared to those who don't.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy stats.
The reason that osteoporosis fractures aren't reported on, I believe, and this is not science, it's just my opinion. Everything I tell people is usually science, but I just think, but this isn't, that's why I just wanted to preface that.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that people just don't see it as frightening. It's like, you know, what happened to your grandmother? She broke her hip, got stuck in the hospital, died. You know, everyone's right. But then it's just like, people just go to pieces and cry like babies if somebody dies of cancer. It's like, well, you're dead. What's the difference?
And it's the same result, right?
Dismiss, like, oh, well, that's just life. And the other one is like, you know, so-and-so got eaten by rats.
Right. Yeah, it's like, oh.
The worst death ever.
That's
like,
true.
Difference. It's, you're dead.
Yeah. It's so like, oh, grandma.
We should treat it the same.
That's true. Yeah. It's the exact same end. It's like, oh, grandma got old and fell down and broke her hip and she just passed away.
Osteoporosis too. So, I mean, if somebody could retort and say, well, yeah, but people who have a hip fracture, they're all elderly. Not true. There's people who just are inactive. I had a meeting at West Point not too long ago, and they were talking to me about like the best of the best, physically, mentally, you know, they go to West Point. Yeah. Take weak people, and they said we have incoming cadets that have osteopenia and osteoporosis.
No kidding.
They're just they just don't use their body. You know, it's a dysfunction of disuse.
Okay.
So you know, you don't use your body. You spend all your time playing video games. And
right. Know. So. One thing that our strength coaches would always stress is not only are you getting stronger, like lifting weights and loading the bar up on your back and everything, but you're also increasing the density of your tendons and ligaments and making them thicker. So when you get out on the field, that sure. You're safer.
Yeah. Good study on that. Benjamin and Ralphs, 1996. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. If you put impact level forces, it has to be higher than a squat really.
Right.
You know, so somebody, you know,
like you want plyometric
to have very high loads put on the body. And that's what the body adapts to the most. It's sort of like testosterone receptors. They respond to heavy. There's no getting around heavy.
Okay.
So our bodies really work well around heavy loads. But the problem is that recommendation is just force people to get under loads they have no business being under and then lifting very stupidly. So, you know, and so I have just two different approaches to loading the body to these extreme degrees, one to cause bone density adaptation and the other to cause muscular adaptation, where the risk is almost gone and the benefit is outrageously higher than what we see with conventional exercise. And that was my objective.
With the OsteoStrong, do you get the tendon and ligament thickening as well as the bone density? Okay, so there you go. Yeah. It just so efficient. So you're getting the same thing in a short amount of time and you're saving yourself from, I mean, and that's where I've come to in my life. It's like, I've done some dumb things in the past. They were fun at the time. It's like bench a lot of weight, deadlift a lot of weight, squat a lot, but I'm 39 now. I put myself through the ringer. It's like, I have made a commitment to myself to never put a bar on my back again. I am never going to, because every time I do, something happens and my back's thrown out for 3 weeks. It's like, well, stop doing it, right? Yeah. So there's no need to do that.
No, in nature, would you ever stack something on your back and walk around with it?
No.
Yeah, if we were in like a native tribe and I was like, Nicholas, let's build a, you know, building today out of big rocks. And you're like, okay. And I'm like, now put this big rock on your back. You'd be like, but I just carry it in front of me.
Right. Yeah. How am I going to get it there first off? Like, hey, throw it off the cliff onto my back.
I'll just catch it on my neck. Yeah. A standard squat is not a good approach.
Oh, not a good move. So what led to the X3 system?
Seeing the research from OsteoStrong, it was very apparent that I, you know, like, we have X capacity here and 7X capacity here. So right. Once I figured that out, and I document this in great detail in the book.
Yeah. And it's really easy to understand the concept too. It's like you're trying to lift the same heavy weight through a range of motion where you've basically got three different strengths. Where yeah. You're at the bottom and you're doing a bench press for people who aren't watching on YouTube, it's like you're at an incredibly vulnerable position with a heavy amount of weight that you're trying to stress yourself, which is really only good for the top portion, but you got to get it through that bottom range. And that's where you're susceptible to injuries and joint degradation and all that.
Drastically variable capacity. So we need a variable weight. We need a weight that changes as we move to deliver very high forces. So when I do a chest press, I'm holding 540 pounds at the top, 300 pounds in the middle, and 100 pounds at the bottom. And then I hit that 540 pounds for 20 repetitions.
Wow.
And then I can't get there anymore. And then I do as many reps as I can that are just halfway in the 300 pound range. And then my last couple of reps are in the 100 pound range, but the entire muscle is devastated in every range of motion to its biomechanical capability. Now, this is what my patents are on. Just the process of exhaustion and the system of exhaustion to completely fatigue the muscle. And like the fact that people think you need more than one set. I'm like, oh. No, you only need one set because weightlifting sucks. And they're like, what are you talking about? I go, answer this question for me. How many sets do you do in the sunlight to get a tan? How many times you got to run outside, irritate your skin with the sun, and run back inside, recover for however long that is, and then run outside and do it again, and then run back in. And then, you know, like, do you need to do that 10 times? Run back and forth? Or, you know, is it just like a good half hour on the 4th of July and you put some sunblock on and you're going to have a good tan?
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, it's the last thing you said. And I'm like, right. So what did we learn? You know, and they usually are clueless.
Right.
You only need one stimulus. Bone density is the same thing. You only need one of the appropriate level of loading.
Gotcha. So,
oh, it can be sunny on Christmas Day and we can go outside and we're not getting, you know, a tan from from that. No one is. Because the light's just not intense, which is why, you know, when you pick up the 10-pound dumbbell and you're doing curls with it, like, I don't care who you are, you're doing nothing.
Yes.
Right. So, like,
you know, you have to do that for half the day to get what you need out of it.
Yeah.
Even then. Because you're
getting away from heavy.
Because you're not getting the hormonal response that you're looking for.
You won't get any hormonal response from that. I mean, you'll burn through your ATP, glycogen, and creatine phosphate, but you won't burn through it fast enough to show a deficit. You know, so gotcha. I mean, it's like, you know, like, do long distance runners have really big quadriceps?
No.
They run on twigs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that would be like the equivalent of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had to really be strategic in loading the body in the right way so that we could exhaust, because it's a level of exhaustion under incredible amounts of force. Now, people keep wanting, like, weightlifting for some reason, fitness in general, is very dogmatic.
Oh, my gosh. So is nutrition.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that whole world's just bananas.
People don't know what that word means. It's like you're almost religiously devoted to an idea about how something works. And if it gets challenged, you're like upset. And also, by the way, anybody who gets upset about a scientific issue they need counseling. That's yes. So stupid. You know, like,
those are some deep-seated issues there.
You know, it was like a year or two ago, like Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez said that we should make it illegal to continue research on global warming because it's settled. Like, no, you just like the fact that people believe in it. But if you want to stop science,
right,
because of your feelings, like, you should be thrown in a bottomless pit. Like, what an asshole.
Yeah, you can no longer claim to be a scientist if you want to stop science.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, she's a scientist. She's a bartender. So, she has a bartender's license. That's what was her job. She got into Congress, which is like another, we could talk for an hour.
That's a whole nother debacle, yeah.
That's a different show. Yeah. But it just, like, it's so mind-blowing when someone says, you know, we can't do science anymore.
Yes. Because
it's hurting people's feelings. What?
Yeah.
And back to the fitness issues, like, you know, I'm challenging a lot of things that people have been doing a long time, and yeah, they get upset.
But yeah, it's challenging. It's like it's challenging their way of life. And their belief system. It's like, no, it has to be this way because I've done it so long and this is the way it is. When in reality, science may say something completely different with variable resistance. The studies have come out that you can. Yes. And what in your mind is the Cornell study the most profound one?
No.
No.
Later on, they proved that the higher the ratio of variance from bottom to top, the more effective.
No kidding.
Yeah, so in the Cornell study, it was like, you know, X at the bottom and, 1.2X at the top, whereas we're going like X at the bottom and about 5X at the top.
Gotcha. And that was because in the Cornell study, they were doing two groups with one athletes and what was it, wrestlers and I forget what the other
group was. It was random assignment.
Okay, so two groups. One was doing traditional bars and dumbbells, and the other one was doing variable resistance along with the weight. So right, so they lowered the bar weight.
All the weight, but they'd lower the weight by like 10, 20, 30%.
Gotcha. And
they'd strap really lightweight bands on. I mean, that was all that was available at the time.
Right. And that was kind of, Louis Simmons does that a lot. He was kind of one of the big guys at Westside Barbell, the conjugate method to put bands on bars. And
yeah. And Simmons, definitely advance that. Like, I think there's, somebody could probably correct me on this, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe Westside Barbell, it's one gym in Ohio.
And yes.
Idiots and wrong, so I won't say that. I've been correct on that. Who cares? It's in Ohio.
Yeah, who cares?
They would, I think they've broken like 200 strength world records.
Oh, yeah. A ridiculous amount.
Right. And they use variable resistance. So I'm like, yeah, well, I can show you 16 studies that show you you grow more muscle, you gain more strength, which, it, by the way, is the same thing, with variable resistance. So, yeah, obviously.
Would they do better, do you think? Could you argue they would do better with only band loading rather than having the bar? I mean, obviously, they're going into competitions. They have to have the bar. They have to train that way.
Yeah, for I mean, people who are training for powerlifting and weightlifting, you know, it's like, how does a pitcher train? He throws a ball.
Throws right? the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Does he bench press also? Usually not. You know, because it's competitive motion that you got to be good at. Even the strength training program of like Tiger Woods, like he said, one of his secrets to success was he really got into strength training, but they had to be really careful not to screw up his swing. So, and keep in mind, like weightlifting is a percent of your strength. I mean, a percentage of your performance right. has to do with the strength, but a large percentage has to do with your technique.
That's
it's
right.
A skill. Like it's not just raw output. So like you can, you know, take somebody who has incredible power in their chest and shoulders and triceps and put them in a bench press competition. But if they've been training on some, you know, hammer strength machine where they don't have to actually control a bar.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They'll drop a bar on their face.
It's totally different. Yeah.
Totally different, right? Yep. It's a skill.
Yes.
And those guys, they need to keep that skill wired. Like, here's another one. A sprinter will never go out for a jog.
Right.
Because it screws up their stride.
Mm-hmm.
They want to fire their lower extremities in the same way when they're running to keep their movement. Perfect.
Yeah. Even to the point when they are, when their pace has been reduced, they step off the track and they go, come back in a couple of days because we don't want to train you to be slower. We're training you to be faster.
Right.
Yeah. That's, and we had that in football all the time. It's guys who looked incredibly good that look, we called it look like Tarzan, play like Jane. It's like guys who would step out on the field who were weight room savages, and then they would come out onto the field and you go, where's all that strength at? And it was because they didn't have the right technique. So to your point, strength is one facet of athletic performance. It's not the only facet.
Right. And a lot of football training used to be weights, and sort of they thought, you know, the drills were just not as important as just being strong. And it's the opposite now.
Yeah.
In fact, they don't spend much time strength training at all. It's skill work all the time.
Yes.
And so a lot of the NFL guys that I'm working with now, I'm working with eight of them, they're just like, they're like, I'm so happy I can do some strength training again because my strength coach is like, you know, we don't really do that.
Wow. And the strength coaches, from what you said earlier, and it's true, and it's been true forever, they're scared to get guys hurt. Because if they get guys hurt, they get fired. They're done.
Cost a team $1 million. It's like, like you work at a warehouse and you crash a forklift into you know, something worth $1 million. Like they're like, it's time for you to go.
Oh, that's enough. Now, I love having muscles. Obviously, you love having muscles. I feel better. I love working out. It gets the oxygen to the fresh blood to the brain, which is my primary concern at this point, is like stay moving, stay active, stay at a good healthy weight. That way I can keep going and my brain's firing so I don't get dementia, Alzheimer's, because obviously as a football player, that's
been concussed a few times.
Six times and 30,000 head hits. So you think about all those and you hear the stories and it's like, I want to avoid that at all costs. What do I have to do? I got to be at a good weight. I got to take care of my joints and I have to work out regularly to keep providing the fresh. What'd you say?
Anti-inflammatory nutrition is good too.
That's exactly right. We'll get to that. I want to get your thoughts on nutrition because obviously you don't, one without the other is nothing. So, I mean, I would argue nutrition's more important than even strength training, but you know,
these stupid memes that are like nutrition is 80% of your results or 70% of your results. It's like, no, nutrition is 100% and training is 100%. They're two different subjects and you need to have them both.
Yeah.
100%. If not, yeah. You know, you're not going to get the results.
Tell people who are thinking about getting in back into a fitness routine, like, why do they need muscles? Why do they want muscles? Why is getting strong in your mind? Why is it important?
Being lean are the two greatest drivers of long life. And they also have a tremendous impact on a quality of life. You know, obviously if you're 80 years old and you can open the pickle jar and move the lawn furniture around and, you know, still pick up the grandkids, like you're really enjoying yourself. But there's a lot of people who get to retirement age and brings tears to their eyes to get out of the chair because they were never conditioned right and they screwed up their body doing yard work. And, you know, they're just, it's never going to come back for them. So, you know, maybe the last 20 years of their lives will be miserable.
And that's a way that I live my life is like in reverse. It's when I'm 85, when I'm 95, I don't want to look back and go, man, I wish I would have done more. I wish I would have eaten better. I wish I would have trained. I wish I would have been stronger so I could still be useful and I didn't have to be hobbling around and my kids didn't have to come take care of me. It's like, if you do all the things today that you're supposed to, you're going to have a really long, healthy, fruitful life. And that for me is why we eat well, why we train the way we do.
Like keeping, you know, your partner excited about you.
Right.
I see guys letting themselves go. And I'm just like, you know, I tell my buddy, I'm brutally honest with everyone. So, you know, I see a guy kind of letting himself go. And I'm like, I notice your wife's not letting herself go. You see a lot of mismatched couples. You see a lot of big fat guys with like wives with six packs.
No.
No.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, she'll leave. Yeah. You can look at you and you see a disgusting slob. So get
and you. Yeah, and you like to be around people who have the same.
It's a positive.
Values. It's yes.
Yeah, it's like I like being around people who, when they look at their day or whatever, it's like, today's going to be a great day. Look at all the great stuff I have. And, you know, there's other people that are like, oh, I don't go to the office. This sucks.
Really sucks. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can't be around those people. Those people suck.
It's the have-tos versus the get-tos. Like the people who take care of themselves get to do everything. The people who don't take care of themselves, I have to do this. I have to do that. Or I have to spend time with my kids. Or I have to. It's like, no, dude, you get to. You're lucky. You're one of the fortunate ones. And that's, I think, people who – go ahead.
No, I every time somebody whines about something like that, I kind of take it to the extreme. Like, would you rather be in a wheelchair? Oh, you don't want to walk over there? You know, at least you have legs. Go talk to the guy without legs and tell him your problems. You know what to say.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Complain to that person. See if they have any empathy towards you.
Right. Yeah. Well, it'll change your perspective if you give it a try.
I don't think a lot of us think about the positive hormonal effects that exercise incites within the body. How can we promote those benefits? How can we maximize the benefits of hormones through exercise?
So we now, growth hormone is not an anabolic hormone, but it is an anti-catabolic hormone. So
okay.
From losing muscle.
Yes.
And it does increase the metabolization of fat, of adipose tissue. So stabilization.
Pretty beneficial.
Yeah. Stabilization firing plus loading can upregulate that to 2,000% in moments. In fact, me and my co-author, Henry Alkire, in 2016, published a meta-analysis on the subject of stabilization firing and growth hormone upregulation. And we were mostly looking at whole body vibration, but there's a lot of different ways you can get stabilization firing, like lifting heavy with variable resistance. You know, when I'm up here in an overhead press, I'm, you know, my core is jackhammering to keep my body stable. That's the same thing. Like, the vibratory stimulus doesn't need to come from something that vibrates. Like, you're vibrating. And as long as those muscles are contracting, not consciously, but subconsciously, there's a growth hormone release. And it's huge. And so this is part of the reason why I hate saying this, but CrossFit is like everything's self-stabilized. And yeah. CrossFit guys get lean. I mean, I don't see any muscle gain, but or much, but you do see them dropping body fat really quick.
Yes. And
that stabilization firing.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. The only thing that I feel almost compelled to say about CrossFit is, like, it's still one of those things where you're trading in your long-term joint health for a lean body. I mean, it's just the greatest friend to an orthopedic surgeon has been CrossFit in the last decade.
Surgeons will sponsor CrossFit events.
Of course they will.
It's like, there's, like, you know, like an LA orthopedic group that, like, sponsors it. And I mean, it would be like a lung cancer a fun run that was sponsored by, like, Camel cigarettes. Like, huh?
Yeah. Oh gosh. You're just top of mind awareness. We, in case you need your labrum repaired in your hip or your shoulder, we're here for you. It's like, you need that rotator cuff fixed.
Right. Because if you're in the stands and you miss a step, that could happen. Certainly has nothing to do with the athletes.
Oh goodness. So I love the whole body vibration thing. Now, does that factor into, like, one of the body plates or one of the shakers, like the, does that help with growth hormone, or what's the science say on that?
You need to add load. It's worthless to add load. The worst investment I ever made was investing in one of those companies.
Yeah.
I was an owner of them. Because scientifically, I knew what they could do, provided the right protocol. But people were far more interested in sort of exaggerating the product from other perspectives. And, oh, nobody cares about growth hormone. One of the guys I was working with, and I'm like, what? So this is before they regulated injectable growth hormone that could be prescribed. Okay. And I'm like, that's a $4 billion industry. You don't think anyone cares, huh? You sure? Because, like, you clearly haven't looked into this. You're a moron. He wasn't wrong. It's like, people didn't, the companies didn't see it. And so they ended up and all the companies in this category didn't have a scientific understanding. The problem was, the original builder of vibration platforms who understood it very well is an Italian guy named, he's a researcher and professor at an Italian university. I can't recall what one. His name was Carmelo Bosco. And then he had a kind of an understudy, Marco Cardinale. And they were great, and they totally understood the product, but it didn't exist. It was like they built one for testing. And then they came out with their own, and it was really poorly named. It was like an acronym. It was like I can't even remember. It was so bad. But I mean, like a seven-letter acronym, like the AMHRSI. Oh, no. Yeah. It just like you couldn't remember it. Obviously, I can't remember it.
Yeah.
it was terrible. So they failed. And then a bunch of people copied their product, but they weren't scientists. So they just would just say all kinds of totally outrageous medical claims, you know, like alkaline water. Like people in the alkaline water business for a long time were like, oh, it cures cancer, you know, I can't tell you what it does for cancer.
Right. There was an NFL app.
Nothing. Yeah, in fact, the more alkaline your diet is, the more acid your body makes. To get to neutral, to try to find balance. Trying to find homeostasis, yeah. Like what? Yes. That's just so illogical. Body wants a certain pH. Like your blood's gonna be a certain pH, and your body's fighting you to get it there if you're trying to mess with it. So eat your steak, drink your red wine, drink your coffee. It's all acidic and doesn't matter. Because the body's going to fix it all anyway. Like that was never an axis of disease or dysfunction. Never will
be. Give me your nutrition. What do you advocate for? Or how do you eat throughout the day, I guess, is how I should ask that.
So here's something interesting. I try to get on a lot of mainstream media shows. And the problem is they think my approach to nutrition is super extreme. I don't see it as extreme at all. Like not one bit. Because once I learned how much protein the body needs to grow muscle, which everybody should be trying to do. Everybody.
Yes.
The ladies should be trying to grow as much muscle as they can. And I've proven that much later in life, there's 50, 60 year old users of X3 who put on more muscle than they did in their 20s and 30s in a couple of months.
That's cool.
Well, it's because of the efficiency of the stimulus. Like it's not magic. Like I can prove all this. I wrote a book about it. People are like, just explain, you know, in like one or two sentences how X3 works. I'm like, I wrote a 266 page book.
Boil that down to one sentence.
Well, I actually did. It's weightlifting is a waste of time. that's my thesis.
That's it.
I don't know how helpful that is, but you know, you can read the book. Where was I?
Nutrition, about getting the correct amount of protein when you know how much protein it takes.
Gram per pound of body weight. There's plenty of research on this. And that's like a middle of the road recommendation. There's some recommendations higher, but they use really crappy protein sources like whey. Like whey is only 18% usable by the body because it has all the wrong ratios of of essential amino acids. So whey is not very valuable to the body at all.
Okay.
Right. And so when I reconcile everything with a gram per pound of body weight, a higher quality protein, that makes sense. I would say that.
Is that where you start with protein? When you're building out a plan, you say start with protein and then go from there. Okay.
That's the most important macronutrient. And there's only two macronutrients. Because carbohydrates no longer fit the definition. They're not needed by the body at all for any reason.
No, not for building muscle. No?
No, you can hydrate a muscle and you can accelerate growth under certain circumstances. So I have a protocol in the book that, you know, first you vasodilate before your workout. And then you do your workout and then you have a small amount of carbohydrates that's based on your body weight. And then you stretch. And it's a lot more detail and understanding. Yes. But it, you know, it's like 20 pages. It took me to write that in the book. And now that's a level of permanent muscle growth. That's to get hyperplasia. And there's plenty of research on this, but it's never really like you got to stack a couple things together and use the carbohydrates to basically force enough fluid into the muscle where the muscle, as that fluid is dispersing, has some space to actually divide muscle cells. So, gotcha.
Wow, that's cool.
That's the only nice thing I can say about carbohydrates.
So no,
let me tell you, like, carbohydrates in nature appear right before it gets cold.
Yes.
They appear at the end of the warm season before the cold season. Bears give themselves type 2 diabetes every year before they go into hibernation so that they can get as fat as possible. And they gorge themselves. And when they would come out of hibernation, they're like ripping deer apart. And eating fish, and then they go to carbohydrates.
Yeah, berries. Yeah.
Yeah, berries, honey. I had a little squirrel trap in my parents' yard, and the idea was like, this is crawling with squirrels. Let's get some of these squirrels out of here. Trap them, and drive 20 miles away and drop them off. They'll figure it out. There's nuts everywhere. Yes. So we put some peanut butter, which, peanut butter is just a sugar shitstorm. Like, it's not ground peanuts, for those of you that don't know. there's a reason it tastes like a candy bar, because it's basically a candy bar.
It does taste like candy.
You're right. Like, peanuts don't taste like that. It's so they're like honey roasted peanuts. So they're just covered in like a sugar syrup, glazed in a sugar syrup. That's why they taste like candy bar. So we put some peanut butter to get these squirrels. Before the squirrels could even get to it, we don't even know. We had like my parents' yard has this 7-8 foot fence surrounding it. This brown bear somehow gets over this fence, like leaps over the fence to eat this peanut butter.
Figured it out.
Right. And, we're backing away like, oh my God, this bear is the size of a car. And he ate all the peanut butter and we went inside because we didn't want him to, think we were food.
To eat you too. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That makes sense.
So
go ahead.
Carbohydrates exist to get you fat when getting fat would be an advantage. So going into the winter, the more adipose tissue you have, the better survival you have. Because for two reasons. One, you can live off of it if you can't find food. You can go for a year without food if you have the fat.
It's been done before, yeah.
Done before. Second thing is that the more layers you have in your, in the subcutaneous, it protects you from the cold.
Right.
Yeah. So that makes sense. So like, I would argue that type 2 diabetes is not a dysfunction. It's a function designed to protect you. We just stay in humans, and a large percentage of humans stay in a diabetic state for 20 straight years, and that's why they're dying. Yeah. Weak your, it doesn't weaken your immune system as quickly as the bears are doing it. But you know, when you've been in that state for 20 years, well, you're in trouble. Like no system is working right.
Right. Yeah. Your system's
the COVID people, 94% of the deaths associated with COVID, there was comorbidities, meaning they had type 2 diabetes and heart failure. So really you can look at the death rate and cross off 94% as they really died because they were dysfunctional.
Yeah, I read even it was 2.6 comorbidities on average for the 94% of deaths. 2.6 on average. So it's not just one. We're talking four.
They all kind of go hand in hand. Like,
yeah,
heart disease and diabetes are like, you know, you it's a two for one.
Right.
you eat like you're an unsupervised child, and then you get both. Lucky you.
Yes. Yeah. Unhealthy is unhealthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it turns out. So protein, you're out on carbs. What about fiber? What's your source of fiber?
I think two Instagram posts ago, I posted the research that, and I put a quote of the conclusion. There is no reason the body needs fiber in any amount whatsoever, ever. Now, the logic of fiber is it gets things moving in the digestive system. But if your toilet's plugged up and then you throw a towel, like a hand towel in your toilet and flush the toilet 20 times, did it get there? Think about the logic of that. Like, let's put particulate matter in something that's plugged up because that'll get it broken loose. Really? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So what about like gut microbiome and all of that and feeding the prebiotic, probiotic?
Right.
Like feeding the good gut microbiome.
Basically the we know very little about the microbiome. And I hear a lot of people who are kind of like, what do I want to call them? Science evangelists, but not really scientists.
Gotcha. Yes.
You know, like, I mean, Dave Asprey would fit in that category, and he's a very smart guy. So I'm not putting these people down at all, but
right.
Like I hear a lot of those type of people talking a lot about microbiome, and I'm sitting there going, we know next to nothing about the human microbiome. Before we start making health decisions based on some metric that we pulled out of that, let's not. It just doesn't make sense. Like, we don't know. Like, we know the fungus in our gut is bad. Candida. What does candida eat? Carbohydrates. So, okay. So we want, and that has a lot to do with appetite. So if you're eating sugar all the time,
right,
to eat more, and
yes,
so the candida affects ghrelin and leptin, which are the two hormones that tell you you're full. So if you That's never right. full, you're always hungry. Well, there you go. So like that's like the one thing that we know about the microbiome. All this other stuff is just total guesswork. And I met one guy, like top of the field in microbiome research, and he was explaining how he did an analysis on a celebrity athlete who I also won't name. His microbiome was just, it was awful. Like, he was so unhealthy and everything was wrong. And I know a little bit about his business. It's not my field, but I know that we know almost nothing about it. And I was like, well, specifically what? And he stops and he's, well, you know, I mean, we don't really know the very specific. I'm like, you don't know anything. Your field. I'm not you. Like,
right.
Everybody in your field is like barely scratching the surface of what different, and I think there's something like a million times more DNA. Like, again, it's not my field. I could be getting this
right.
it could be 10 million. I don't know. I think a million times more DNA in the various bacteria in our guts than there is in the actual human cells. So we'll be mapping this stuff out. You know, like we may be dead old men.
10 lifetimes. Yeah.
Yeah, lifetime.
It's like outer space.
Tomorrow. Oh, I love how everybody thinks we can come up with a good vaccine tomorrow. It's like, okay, AIDS is a virus. We've been waiting on that vaccine for like 40 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any day now.
Still waiting.
Yeah. The cold. We've been waiting for that one for 100.
Yeah, it's not coming.
The clock, whenever. We're going to get a vaccine. Okay.
So give me back to the nutrition. Give me your day, like a day in the life.
I got to give you a week because my
okay,
day,
cool.
So on a day that I'm eating, I will do 2-3 pounds of meat in one meal.
Okay.
Right now, I detail this in the book and how and why. But it's really the, the one meal. So I do get a fasted benefit, and then, you know, satiation is great at that one meal. And then I get to really, kind of satiate and feel super before I go to bed. And you grow at night anyway. Like that's
right,
that's
when you're resting. Rest and repair.
Yeah, like three of the references in the book, three of the studies I talk about. Yeah, like when you're sleeping, which is why you should never compromise on sleep. You know, I know guys who lift and they're like, you know, they get 4 hours of sleep and they're like, well, I'm tougher than everybody else. So this is what I do. Yeah, not how it works.
Bad idea. Yeah.
Yeah, you cannot out-train a need to sleep. So you really want to get a decent night's sleep, which is why I'm not a big fan of alcohol.
I'm not either. I don't drink. Yeah.
Yeah, I do just to be social.
Social, yeah. Like somebody offered me a drink the other day. I had family over for a birthday, and somebody was like, "Hey, you want one of these?" Like, yeah, sure, I'll take it. And then I have a couple sips and I carry it around. It's like, yeah, it's fine. It's just not to be awkward or whatever. But it's like, normally I find a place to put it down once I'm out of sight. And it's like, got to move on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just doesn't seem to be moving in the right direction for me.
Right. So putting it down is a great idea. Now, on the days I don't eat, which is so right now, first I was doing one meal every 48 hours. I did that for a little bit, which emulated a study that I thought was incredible that actually showed an anabolic spike in, you know, when you go 48 hours and then eat a meal, is like your body's like been dying to grow and you grow even more.
Wow.
Yeah. I show how that works in the book. And that's, one of the things I get accused of is with the book, and you can read like all the negative reviews are like, this is just a commercial for X3. It's 266 pages and 32 pages talk about X3. So the rest is about the stuff we're talking about now.
Right.
Stupid comment. But
yeah, people are crazy.
Yeah.
Man. People are crazy and people are mad, and it's just tear people down. Yeah. That's what we're really into.
Well, the people who spend a lot of time online, that's true. But normal people aren't like that. Successful people aren't. If everyone was like that, we'd still be living in caves.
That's true.
Yeah, like yes. Those are losers. So, you know, when I was doing 48s because of that anabolic acceleration, And now I'm doing 72 hour block where I get more autophagy and more cellular recycling. So old cells sure. get metabolized. And so I'm doing that once a week to see if I can get better results. And I have been thus far.
How is cell autophagy measured? I hear it all the time, but how's it measured? How do you know?
Can't
measure it. Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have my fraternity letters branded on my arm. I don't
know. Yes. A little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
I can get the light just right there. So that brand, if you look back in my Instagram, a year and a half, that thing was raised, like stuck out. Like it was, yeah. It was like, you know, like embossed lettering on my arm.
Sure.
It was very serious. And then as soon as I started fasting like this, all the scars on my body started disappearing. And that's from autophagy. There's no other explanation. It's eating, it's getting protein from unused cells, protein cells in the body. So like I had a scar here from a motorcycle crash. When I was riding a motorcycle without a helmet when I was like 14, like a dirt bike, you know, just like doing dumb.
Yeah.
Some kids do. And came out from underneath me and I just, bang, just hit my head on the asphalt and it was down to the bone. It was bad. So it always felt like there was like a little wire stitched in here. And like, I mean, I'd have girlfriends like touch my face and be like, what the hell is under your skin? And I'm like, that's a you know, it's underneath, so you can't really see it, but they'd be like, ow. Like that's the worst scar I've ever felt. Yeah. It's there. I can feel it. But, you know, no one else can.
It's remarkable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're able to maintain your size.
You do not lose mass when you fast. You lose mass when you calorically restrict. Because when you calorically restrict, your body thinks that's the new normal. Like you won't be able to get more, you know, more food. So it's going to make adjustments based on the environment so that you can thrive off of far less calories.
Yeah, so it's going to make you smaller.
Right. It upregulates cortisol and long term. So an upregulation of cortisol that's short term, like any exercise upregulates cortisol. And also there's no such thing as a bad hormone. Like I read articles all the time written by fitness people that are like, growth hormone is the good hormone. Cortisol is the bad one. Like your body doesn't make hormones that are trying to screw you up. Like it's like your body just decides to poison you one day. Really? You think right. That's a clowns. You hear this all the time. It's terrible. Totally. Right. Or it's a misread of the science, but we know like a lot of the fitness industry doesn't absorb science at all. So, and never really has. Like some of these things are established for 40 years. So cortisol, when you're calorically restricting, goes up and stays there. And cortisol does two things. It gets rid of muscle and protects body fat. So you keep body fat longer. So it's keeping you fatter longer. Now, cortisol, here's another thing I've heard is people who try and reconcile like what I'm saying, they say like, cortisol makes you fat. That's an oversimplification. And oversimplification is another word for wrong.
Right.
You have a lot of trouble losing body fat. In fact, it may be impossible at certain levels to metabolize body fat and use it as fuel when you have high levels of cortisol. And also growth hormone and cortisol seem very inversely related.
Okay.
So when you calorically restrict, your cortisol goes up, your growth hormone goes down. So you're losing muscle. You may be losing some body fat too, depending on the deficit. You know, you just got to get the fuel from somewhere. But when you have no calories or not enough to trigger the fasted state to be stopped, something very different happens. Your body does not look for a new homeostasis because obviously eating, like getting zero calories is like not something the body can adjust to because that'd be death. So the body just keeps you stronger. So it upregulates growth hormone and suppresses cortisol. So you go from just like fat becomes the fuel.
Okay.
And you preserve all your muscle, presumably because you've got to work harder to get your meal. You got to chase down that water buffalo or whatever. Like it can't make you weak when you get hungry. Otherwise it's a death sentence if you got to chase your dinner down.
So when you're eating every 72 hours, you're not eating 3 days worth of calories, or are you? Or is it,
what do you mean?
Are you eating 3 days worth of calories? Are you eating at one meal?
Can I eat after?
Yes. Yeah. When you break the fast.
No, just 1 day's worth.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. There's no calories. I mean, I also don't count calories. So.
You don't have to.
Or like, you know, like sometimes, you know, like I'll go to a restaurant, like the only thing, like they'll say like, we're known for the ribeye. And I'm like, like I love ribeye, but it's loaded with fat.
Right.
So it's hard for me to get my protein from a ribeye without going into a caloric surplus. So on a day like that, it's like, all right. But caloric deficit while overfeeding protein keeps you very anabolic.
Okay. And yep.
Studies on that.
Right.
Jose Antonio was involved in two of them, and he's out of Florida State. He's a very smart guy. Like, and he can distill things probably even better than me.
And that's where the science has leaned towards. If you have enough protein in your body while in a caloric deficit, you can maintain, or even some people would say, I guess science may say, you can even build muscle while in a caloric deficit.
It is true. But so we don't know. There hasn't been one of those studies done looking specifically at cortisol, which I'd like to see somebody do. Like I wouldn't be the one. Like I'm not, you know, nutrition is not my field.
Right.
Very careful, everything I say about nutrition, like any of the statements that are conclusionary at all, I'm referencing another study.
Right.
So people are like, you have no background in nutrition. You shouldn't be talking about it. I'm like, all I'm telling you about is existing research. And, you know, being a biomedical engineer, my job is really to analyze data and research, you know, having to do with biology. So
yeah,
that is my background. But
give me the subtitle of the book, because it's weightlifting is a waste of time and so is cardio. What about, and I think a lot of people would be interested in this. Tell me about the cardio part being a waste.
So cardio is a little like caloric deficit.
Right.
Your central nervous system is like an engineering team. Like you ever see like the pits at like a Formula One race?
Oh yeah. We watch it every Sunday.
You're an F1 fan? I am too.
Oh, that's yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, hardly any Americans. Like it's the best motorsport.
Oh, it's so awesome.
I'm so happy for Verstappen this year. Like
yeah.
He's finally like, and I'm happy for Honda. You know, he's got the Honda.
Yes.
And Honda's got the least reason to produce a great engine in that sport.
Right.
And whereas like, you know, Ferrari and Mercedes have the
biggest. Ferrari's getting killed.
They're doing terrible.
They're getting killed.
Yeah. So why is cardio a problem? So Cardio is a problem because, again, cortisol secretion, like that engineering team, the guys in the pits, your central nervous system, they're in the pits and they're rebuilding your car and making adjustments. You are your car. They're making adjustments all the time to make you better for the environment. You know, so sometimes guys pull into the pits and they change the type of tire they're using. You know, they go from hard to soft or whatever because
right.
There's problems with the track or it's too hot and the tires are blistering, things like that. So what your body does is given an environment, it's going to change based on the stresses of that environment. So if you put the body in a situation where you need to go long distances, you basically need to become an economy car. What does your central nervous system do? Well, it makes the frame lighter and the frame is bone. So you lose bone density. So your chassis is weaker. Now, can a weaker chassis support a more powerful muscle? No, it cannot. You don't want the muscle breaking the bone. So cortisol, again, is secreted so that you lose muscle mass and you also preserve more body fat because you want more fuel to take you further. So you basically, you lose muscle, you lose bone, but you keep all the body fat.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And this has been known for 40 years. Yet the fitness industry has never picked up on it.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Terrible. Oh, well,
that's good news for a lot of people.
The conclusion of the book, it really looks at, like, you know, people are going to be upset by a lot of this information because it's very different and, you know, they're emotionally tied to issues that
they're
logical about. So they shouldn't do that, but they're going to anyway. And like, you need to look at the fitness industry. The fitness industry is probably the most failed human endeavor. Like, who really looks? Like, I can give you, you know, an anecdotal sort of way of looking at it. Like, who looks like a professional athlete? Pretty much professional athletes, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Often, you know, are you at the beach and somebody walks by and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, is that 1 in 100 people? No, it's probably more like 1 in 10,000. So if 1 in 10,000 really creates something impressive, maybe 1 in 1,000 look pretty good, but the 1 in 100, the top 1 percentile of leanness, the percentage body fat, which is a great number because that considers muscularity. The more muscular you are, your body fat's going down.
Right.
Percentage of your total body weight. The leanest males in the United States are 10.9% body fat.
Yeah.
That's not impressive.
That's not that impressive. No.
No, that's like maybe you can see your top abs.
Yeah, that's pretty normal.
Yeah, that's like I would think it's like a regular guy, but that's the top 1%. Like, the gym's not working.
Right.
What we're doing is not working. It's like, I would say, given that statistic right there, so that means that the gym industry has a 99% failure rate.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think, it's
that's
like
crazy.
Yeah. An industry. What if you know, the mutual fund industry lost 99% of everybody's money?
Yeah, they'd be out of business.
Would anybody want to go buy mutual funds?
No. Right.
It would be a profound failure.
Yeah.
99% of people, based on the model I presented, fail at fitness. Even 1 in 6 males over the age of 18 have used anabolic steroids. That's 17%.
Wow. It's still failure.
Anabolic steroids. You currently use or have used anabolic steroids, yet only 1% achieves the top 1% achieves a kind of pathetic level of fitness. So even the steroid users are failing.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, the people on the internet think, like, you know, everybody, well, they think everybody who's bigger than them takes steroids.
That's true. Doc, hey.
That allows them to think that they're like the peak, they are the peak performers.
Yes. If I knock you down, I feel good. So the fitness industry is failing because the constructs are outdated or not working.
Fitness industry is failing because there's two reasons. The nutrition industry is really like the anti-nutrition industry. Nabisco wants everybody to be a vegan. Now, why? They don't sell vegetables. Well, Nabisco knows vegans don't eat vegetables. They eat cookies and cake and vegan ice cream and all kinds of little delicious nut bars that have nuts, shipped from every continent on earth, burning billions of gallons of fuel doing so. These morons think they're saving the world because they're not eating animals. But, you know, I mean, they're creating.
Was that you who just had a recent post on that? There was somebody that I saw on Instagram that was talking about the amount of carbon emissions and fuel taken by the meat industry and the amount taken by.
It wasn't
raising, but it was, there's probably more.
Or a doctor.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think it was.
They love pointing that out. It's like, yeah, your cute little nut bar that saves all the animals. By the way, like billions of animals are destroyed every year for the sake of farming nuts, fruits, and vegetables. Nobody wants to talk about that. There's just as many lives destroyed farming vegetables as there are farming animals, which brings you back to sort of like the basic intelligence of an expanding species is going to take resources from all other species. If for no other reason, just habitat. Like the more habitat right. we take up, the less there is for animals. Now yes. we can have our own animals like cows, and you know, when they get to the end of a life cycle or they reach maturity, like let's turn them into burgers.
Make them useful.
Yeah. Like so that's the symbiotic relationship we can have with animals. Like we're just the apex predator. That's the way it works. And sorry, but like everything.
And you don't feel bad about that.
You want to plant a garden? What do you need in it? Bone meal, ground up bones. Does that come from not death? You know, like these people just, you know, they see 1/10 of the story. Now, I live in California, and we got a lot of coal burning power. And people plug their electric car in and they're like, look at me, I'm saving the world. And I'm like, yeah, except not at all, because coal provided that. Or the windmills that have a couple truckloads of dead birds every day. You know, like eagles fly into those windmills.
Right. And the amount of power currently where we're at with the way they build these cars, the amount of power and emissions it takes simply to build a factory to build these batteries. It's not to the point yet where
Google, you know,
it's
Google
efficient
oil rig, and then Google lithium mine. A lithium mine is just like a crater in the earth that nothing will ever grow in ever.
Wow.
Oh, it's destruction.
Yeah.
Just, you know, they like I hear the term from some of these environmental extremists, raping the planet. If you want to see raping the planet, check out where batteries come from.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. I'll check that out.
I mean, there's no way around it. Like I said, like,
yeah,
as these grows, there's competing resources. We're going to take the resources we need, and that's going to hurt something else. And there's no way around it. So, you know, it's just, yeah. But it also the same is true, like, if there's a population explosion of deer, it's screwing up the ecosystem for all kinds of other animals.
Right.
But then there's a balancing cycle, though, because then the wolves and coyotes and bears will eat, you know, a lot of the deer, and then they'll have a population explosion. So, like, it all, there's checks and balances in nature.
Right.
Checks and balances, like, and I consider myself somebody who's very environmentally aware. Like, we do need sustainable farming. It's called cows, with grass that they graze on that's got a rootstock that goes 8 feet deep.
Yeah.
You don't kill the field.
Yes. That's terrible. learned I learned about that. We had an awesome episode with a gal, Anya Fernald is her name. She runs Bel Campo Meat Company, which is up in Northern California. They got a 26,000 acre farm right at the base of Mount Shasta. And it's all regenerative farming. And you talk about the grass going down and how much carbon that sequesters out of the air, and how much net positive is carbon happening because of that.
People don't realize that at all.
Right.
The cars you drive, the healthier plants get, but you know, they don't get that.
Right. Yeah. That's a correlation that I actually haven't heard either.
Yeah. 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 That's great.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Also, yeah. I mean, it's just not worth dwelling on.
Yeah. Last, how's the business going? How's X3 going? And yeah, where can people learn more?
So the business is going amazing.
Great.
Waste of Time is a number one bestseller.
Congrats.
In bigger categories. So like, you know, somebody can like get a number one bestseller in like the category of gardening tool buyer's guides. You know,
right. You can go down into the like the tiny minutiae category.
Right. And we did win a couple of those. Like we're in like, you know, we won like quick workouts and we were number one in like ab workouts and fitness for the elderly. I don't know how we got that.
Okay, cool.
Also, we're number one in weight training. We're number one in fitness and exercise.
Nice.
Yeah. That's the overarching one over all of fitness.
Right.
Right. So like,
which does tell you what you were saying earlier. It's like what people have been doing is not working for them.
Well, and most
they're
people
searching.
Are not like, you know, just internet dogmatic, angry people who think that wearing their hat sideways means they're muscular. as much as an NFL player means that they're the same. You know?
Yeah. No. Yeah, so pretty much.
5-inch waist. You're not the same. the fitness kind of like the typical fitness commenters, and by that I mean like the people that have like all day long to post online, they're really lousy people. the comments and the misspelled words. When I probably saw 100 different comments about, you know, in regards to just the title of the book, because I got troll comments before the book was even out, so they clearly they couldn't have. So we get this comment: your hi, your hi.
Oh jeez, yeah.
YOU'RE HIGH. So they. Hi. The two word post, both words were spelled wrong. I mean,
100% error rate.
Spelled it right. Nobody. Also, like, look at where the fitness information is. Like, where are the two biggest places for fitness information? Instagram, pictures, YouTube, video. These people are illiterate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They can just look at pictures and videos. They probably have to sound out the words. Like I don't understand. That's why that's not even our market. So these clowns can come in and complain and throw tantrums. They're just adult babies, I guess, but it's just like, I'm not even targeting this at you. Like you weren't invited to this party. It's cool you came, but not so cool that you like didn't read a word of anything and you act like you've got it all figured out.
So right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we just get rid of these clowns, you know, just bam. Idiots.
Yeah. It's the world we live in.
We get endorsements. There's more and more endorsements on like YouTube or on the website. You know, awesome. Like somebody, a doctor from NASA, Sean Baker, got the Miami Heat, Ben Greenfield, like some really, really highly intelligent, knowledgeable sports performance figures But, you know, the guy with the sideways hat, he knows more.
Oh, yeah. Bro science.
Yeah. Well, yeah, bro science, no science. So, and, you know, like, also, like, our, my favorite study, like, ever, is the Dunning-Kruger study from 1999. Dunning-Kruger. And what it determined was that the least, and it wasn't just based on IQ, it was based on some different tests having to do with just capability. So it was cross-referencing capability versus your ability to judge your work. So the least competent people, the people who like fucked everything up, were most confident in their work. They thought they were the best. Like when they'd score themselves, they're like, oh yeah, I'm a genius. I totally know this. This is even funnier. The most intelligent people had the most doubt in their work.
That's unbelievable. Because
it's like, you know, do you know what you know? Sometimes you know what you don't know. But if you don't know what you don't know, then you're really stupid. And this is, you know, it's on the far end of the unintelligent. They don't know what they don't know.
Oh.
And so they think they know everything.
That's dangerous.
Right. And the Dunning-Kruger study explains the angry internet commenters. And, you know, you can really paint the clear picture when you look at like political comments.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Like some of the most extreme people, you're like, you don't understand how economics works. Actually, you don't understand how math works.
Like right. Just
attraction. These people are so dumb. And they're getting,
it's
they're
painful.
Evangelizing you know, how this country ought to be run. And it's like, you know, these are people who would earn $5, spend $15, and then blame somebody else for that situation. They're like, well, no, I didn't overspend. Like they don't understand.
It doesn't compute.
Right. And so that's Dunning-Kruger. And I think that's a lot of what you see in internet commenters and fitness and in nutrition. They don't understand the words they're using, but they are sure that they're experts.
Doc, hey, this was awesome. I really enjoyed spending some time with you and picking your brain. And like you said, you know, you're a market disruptor. I think it's fun for some conventional wisdom to be dumped on its head and to think critically. And I think the book does a great job of that. And
proven
I think
unwise.
and you do a great job of it. So thank you for the time and thank you for sharing your knowledge with us.
Nicholas, thanks. This was fun.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
All right, brother. Bye-bye.